Hi, I'm Ileana Pena from the College of Medicine of Albert Einstein and Montefiore Einstein Medical Center, and this is my blog. So I welcome you. It's an exciting month for us because the new guidelines for heart failure from the joint work of the American College of Cardiology Foundation and the American Heart Association have now been published. These guidelines have been long awaited, and it really has been an arduous task to put them together. I want to first of all congratulate Dr. Clyde Yancey, who chaired this committee, for really an excellent set of guidelines. I think every time these guidelines get better. And I want to highlight for our audience and for our clinicians, what are the major take-home points of the guidelines? You can download them at myamericanheart.org under Guidelines and Statements, and you can download the executive summary. There's also a set of slides available that can be used for teaching, which have been already, for me, incredibly useful. So let's start out with a new terminology that we haven't seen before, and that terminology is GDMT, which stands for Guideline-Driven Medical Therapy. We used to say optimal medical therapy, but this is really driven by guidelines. Why is that so important? Because once again, it emphasizes ACE inhibitors, angiotensin II receptor blockers if the patient is ACE intolerant, beta blockers, and the three beta blockers that on this blog we have talked about before, bisoprolol, carvedilol, and extended-release metoprolol. It also strengthens the point that in African Americans who are still symptomatic in spite of RAS inhibition, they should strongly be considered for hydralazine and nitrate combination. This is a combination that has not been used as widely as we would hope. The stages of heart failure, which we saw in the older guidelines, stages A, B, C, and D, are once again strengthened. But even better, now we have the recommendations broken down into tables for each of these stages. Much easier to read, much more practical, and much more useful for the clinicians. For the first time, we are seeing biomarkers to be used for prognosis, for triage. The biomarker that's perhaps the best studied are the family of BNP markers, the proBNP and the BNP. Although the guidelines guard us that we do not know yet if guided therapy using biomarker lowering will really affect outcomes. As a matter of fact, that is the topic of a trial that we have also discussed on this blog called GUIDED, which is now beginning, and this is an NIH trial. Another very interesting point for your patients is that of sodium intake. I have sat here before and discussed the importance of restricting sodium. The guidelines are loosening this up, and in a recent review that I did for another meeting, there really are no great randomized clinical trials that tell us that any one specific level of sodium should be recommended. The guidelines simply say sodium restriction may be useful in patients who are congested, or in other words, volume overloaded. My usual stance now for patients is I want you to be able to cook with a little bit of salt, no salt shaker on the table, and absolutely no deli foods. Deli foods are loaded in sodium. Let's go to another interesting area, and that's the area of inotropes. Inotropic therapy is recommended for patients in cardiogenic shock, where organ preservation is critical, and in patients in whom you are using this to make a bridge to a decision, whether it is a bridge to hospice and palliative care, or whether it's a bridge to get medication subtitrated for a short-term use. We are warned that inotropes are potentially harmful, and this is now very clear in the guidelines that they are not to be used inordinately, especially in the place of vasodilators, which often work quite well. We have been eagerly awaiting the recommendations about aldosterone inhibition. We have had for a long time the class 4 patient superimposed upon the Rouse trial data that we know. But now with the Emphasis trial data done in Europe, we have moved aldosterone blockade to an earlier use. In other words, a patient who may be class 2. What are the warnings here? That renal function does not have to have a creatinine of greater than 2.5. So be careful with the creatinine and a potassium of 5. If the patient has a lower creatinine than 2.5 and a better potassium than 5, then definitely aldosterone blockade needs to be thought of earlier, spironolactone or eplerenone. Let's move on to devices. There are new recommendations for devices, particularly for resynchronization therapy. Because of mated CRT and both RAFT and reverse, there is now an earlier recommendation for CRT in patients whose QRSs are greater than 150 with a left bundle and class 2 symptoms. We have known about the class 3 and 4 symptomatology already for a while. There is also a section on acute decompensated heart failure, which I think is really important for clinicians to read if you take care of some of those very sick patients who come into the hospital. We don't have great randomized clinical trials for this acutely decompensated population that is in so much trouble and has such a high rate of readmission. Finally, performance measures and the need to do quality improvement has now made its way to the guidelines. Given the success of Get With The Guidelines Heart Failure and the movement to improve quality, the performance measures are clearly stated. And then at the end, there's a very strong recommendation about coordinated care, the need for team care, and for palliative care that we often don't think about. Palliation doesn't necessarily equal hospice, but certain palliative care will allow the patients and their families to make informed decisions. Even an informed decision about ICDs, although ICDs are recommended because of the SCUT-HF data, lower than ejection fraction 35%, particularly if the patients have already had an event. But the recommendations are to have a conversation with the patient. This is where patient input is so important, and to let them know what are the pluses and the minuses, the good, the bad, and the ugly about ICDs. So I find these guidelines much more useful, practical, and much more humane. I hope you read them, and in my future blogs, I may take some of these areas and discuss them a bit in more depth. I want to thank you again for joining me today. This is Ileana Pena. Have a great day.